Good afternoon or good morning, depending on where you are, everyone. We're just going to wait another moment or so to make sure everybody's in the door, so to speak, and lined up, and we'll get going in just a few seconds. All right. Well, I think we'll make a go of it. Good afternoon, good morning, depending on where you are. If we haven't met, I'm Henry Berman from Exponent Philanthropy. Delighted you're here. This is the second week of our discussions. Last week was incredibly successful. So I want to thank all of you who participated and those of you who followed up with comments or ideas. They were really helpful to us. They're instructive and they're giving us ideas on additional programming we should be creating and or issues we should be tackling in these forums. So thank you for that. And thanks also to so many of you who have spread the word about these discussions through your own networks. That's appreciated. So with that, welcome to all of you who are new this week, as well as those who were with us last week. I've been thinking a lot this week and reading a lot, and there's perhaps an overused phrase in everybody's lexicon right now about all of us being in this together. But I think it's really true. We are. And so that really feeds on what is our common strength in the Exponent community. And that's our ability and our willingness to share. Share what worked well. Share what maybe didn't work so well. That's what allows us to be a community and help all of us grow. So thanks for being here. Just like last week, we have a number of Exponent members. We have a number of other leanly staffed funders who probably should be Exponent members. And those include people with small foundations, donor advised fund holders, individuals with checkbooks, and maybe just interested individuals. And just so everybody knows as well, we may well have some members of the press joining us to hear what you're doing and hopefully help lift up the stories of the differences that all of you are making in your various communities. So we're going to dive in just a minute, but beforehand, my colleague, my co-pilot on putting this all together, Madeline Shore, is going to jump in, briefly run over Zoom about how we're going to use it today for any of you that are unfamiliar with this technology. So Madeline, please.
Thanks so much, Henry. And again, thank you all for coming. To ensure that we can hear the speakers when they're talking, we ask that you all stay on mute and direct any questions or comments, ideas of your own to the chat window. And we'll be monitoring the chat throughout the discussion to make sure that your specific questions for our speakers are heard and making sure that there's a lot of sharing going on of ideas and exchanges, but to make sure that we can hear them when they're talking, we just ask that you remain on mute. And I think that's it, just mute and then use the chat window to share any thoughts or ideas. But I'll toss it back over to you, Henry.
Thanks, Madeline. And do make use of that chat room. There was some incredible discussion last week. If you have a specific question that you'd like to ask as we're going along, but a part of a particular discussion, as opposed to perhaps a more general discussion, send that on to Madeline. We will try and capture those as we wrap up each of the little discussions. So, you know, keep in mind, like all of our programs, we want to share. We want to share our experiences. Remember that some of them may work for you and some may not, and that's okay. As always, you know, please no soliciting for your favorite nonprofit or your fund. As last week, my colleague and friend Brendan McCormick is waiting in the wings on standby in case this is the time that Comcast decides they want to drop my cable or something else happens. So if I suddenly turn into Brendan, you'll know why. And finally, you know, I mentioned that you send us questions, you send us ideas. Well, one of those led to a special webinar we're going to hold next week. It's going to be on Thursday, the 2nd of April at 2 p.m. And we'll be getting notice out about this. We just literally set the time an hour ago. But that will be specifically about, in this time of crisis, how private foundations can make, grants to individuals and then how you would end up reporting those subsequently on your 990 PFs. So we'll get some more information about that, but it was one of the questions that came up last week. So we're trying to be responsive. So send those along. And with that, let's dive in. So I'd like to introduce and ask to join me Heidi Dusek, who's the executive director, and Marnie Keller Krakava, who's a trustee from the J.J. Keller Foundation in Wisconsin. And I want to give a special thanks to Marnie for joining us and bringing in a trustee perspective. So, Heidi, maybe we'll begin with you. And if you could share with us and everybody who's listening, really just a very brief capsule of what areas, what types of programs, what types of organizations and so forth the foundation normally funds so that we all have a context within which you're working. So Heidi, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are a private family foundation in Northeast Wisconsin. Generally, our grant making is about $4 million a year, and our focus is addressing the needs of the most vulnerable. Our grant portfolio is about half unrestricted operating support. Usually the larger organizations that we support, it was kind of a program restricted funding. And then the other half has been a little bit more proactive in a collaborative pooled fund that we support to address root causes of poverty and some innovation and capacity building funds. Again, those are kind of initiatives that we're pulling people together around. So that's a pretty quick capsule of what we fund. We had a couple initiatives underway prior to this, and one of them was related to surrounding nonprofits with high quality back office solutions, business solutions. And so with that has been helpful context as well as we move into this. But I would also say we're going to highlight some of the work that we have done to this point in those collaborative funding partnerships as being a critical piece to our response.
So, you know, I want to ask you what you've been doing differently. So how you vectored off of everything that you just talked about as a result of the virus. What's changed?
Heidi, do you want me to grab that one?
Yeah, I was going to say, Marnie's going to take the lead on that one. And then
great,
I'll follow
Marnie,
up with a couple
please.
So we, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we have really done sort of three categories of things really differently during this time. And the first thing, thanks to Heidi, is that we have moved very quickly and proactively. And she brought a slate of recommendations to the board by March 19th, and we had board approval that same day. So she was able to really pull stakeholders together quickly by leveraging some past efforts that we have with collaborators and funders, as well as nonprofits. And she really served as the convener of those conversations. And the very first thing she recommended is that we transfer $20,000 to our out of our donor advice fund. So we have donor advice funds at all three community foundations near us. And we transferred funds from our donor advice funds into the community foundation's emergency response funds that they were working on. So that's the first thing that we did. The second thing is that we really tried to enable agility and flexibility in our grant making and freed up about $500,000 to go to work right away. And so the recommendation was to remove restrictions on grants that were awarded from the last board meeting. So if we had put any restrictions on those grants, we peeled them away so that people could put that money to work right away. We agreed to expedite any grants that would be coming through from now until April the 30th, which was our next scheduled board meeting. So just committing that we weren't going to wait until the next board meeting, we were going to take grants right away. And then we put $200,000 to be available to address any short-term needs that arise. And decisions could be essentially made by Heidi with our small grants team, which is it's a couple of board members that can make decisions really, really quickly, like within an hour. And then last in that category is really the consideration we're giving now to divert usage of pre-allocated funds differently. So for example, we have, you know, a pot of money in a couple of different places that typically we would give away in a certain way, like to United Way or to our Basic Needs Fund, that's a collective fund here. And we are looking at whether we want to use that money in the same way or whether we want to really divert it to this crisis. And then the last thing was really our internal foundation reflection and flexibility. So the overarching sort of thought around that was to use whatever grant making vehicle is most expeditious and agile and letting go of the control and letting Heidi go. She's closest to the work and we need to let her be quick right now. So we also front loaded the grant making and we expect that will be a trend throughout the year is, you know, we typically have three or four board meetings and it's given away sort of across the year. And this year we are saying we might need to push that all earlier in the year, depending on what we see the needs to be.
So this could be for either Marnie or Heidi. You know, one of the tenets of good management, whether it's for-profit, nonprofit foundation, is thinking through scenarios, having plans. You know, we often talk about succession plans. What if somebody's hit by the bus? You know, that kind of cliche. It sounds like you guys moved incredibly quickly. Had you thought about these kinds of things in advance? Did you say if there were ever an emergency need, you know, the board would, they might talk about the number, but they were prepared to hand off to Heidi and this special team, authority to make grants? Or, you know, if there were, so had it all been pre-thought, or did you guys do this on the fly?
Well, funny enough, that was my next point coming up was emergency governance. So we don't have an emergency governance plan, but we're a very small family foundation. I mean, we have five people on the board, three, four, I'm not sure. Four, I think it's four. And we just, as a family, can move really quickly usually, and we are not very bureaucratic. We try to just make decisions. We don't take votes. We have a nod of the head. And so, no, but this did make us reflect and decide we really do need to have some kind of contingency plan. If one of us were to get sick, for example, you know, how would we handle that? And what would be our emergency plan? So that is one of the things that we are working on right now. Another thing just internally is a simple thing that maybe many of you are doing already, but we were still cutting checks. We like to, you know, write a letter and put a little note on there, but we are now wire transferring so people can get their money fast and we don't have to go through, you know, the bureaucracy of an office situation. And then last, just to kind of wrap up what we're doing differently is we're really trying to challenge our assumptions. You know, we're capitalists in our family. We have a family business, and that's how a large portion of my grandfather's estate that contributed to this foundation. So our family is used to thinking of success in terms of growth of a business and of dollars and cents. And it is really hard sometimes to, you know, get folks that are really engaged in a family business to think about the fact that this model is completely upside down from a business. When the resources are declining, I'm sure most of your portfolios are not looking the same as they were a month ago. You know, the resources are depleting and the need is at a crisis point. So it's diverging, you know, platforms, and it just doesn't always make sense to the business owner at the time. You know, they're used to when things are going well, the money is going well, but now is when people need us. And so we have to really rethink about, you know, what does that mean for us? Are we going to give 5%? Are we going to give 10%? Are we going to stick to our budget? But we recognize that, you know, even though our resources are not looking as nice as they did a month ago, now is when people really need us, and they need us to come forward with that money.
So was there much disagreement is the right word, or discussion in the moment? Let's not talk about the long term with changing mindsets in the moment about spending the money.
None.
Great. I know that. I think that's great. I know in the foundation where I'm at, we made some decisions and then said, yeah, I haven't looked at the portfolio, but it almost doesn't matter.
Right. Hey, Henry, can I chime in on different? Just given the landscape, I also want to chime in on the collaborative work, because we have been nimble and we know that about our landscape that we're in. So I am making all of these recommendations, also knowing kind of where all of the funders are also kind of positioning themselves. So we've been really intentional that when those positions come forward, or when our recommendations come forward, that we're not doubling down on all the things that everybody else is already doing in the emergency space. When I say we acted quickly, I convened the funders on Friday, March 12th, which is when our governor announced that schools would be closing. By Monday, we had a survey out, and by Wednesday, I put the recommendations before the board. So, and all funders had access to all of our survey data. And those calls continue twice a week with all of the funders in our region. So everybody's really coordinating the effort together. So again, we're not all doubling down on the same organizations with the limited resources across our region as well.
Heidi, would you expand for people just a tiny bit on what that survey is and who you did it and how you did it? Because I know when we get to Don, he's done some survey work as well. So be interested to see, you know, where you guys overlap, where you diverge, and what ideas might come forward.
Yeah, so that first funder call, our first concern was we can't tax the nonprofits with all of these questions from all of these funders. So we wanted to create a streamlined approach. And the questions are really, there's only five. The best way to get in touch with you during this time, obviously the organization name. What concerns do you have facing your clients? What concerns do you have facing your staff? And what concerns do you have facing your operation? And then they got to rate where their greatest needs were. Urgent, short-term was kind of next 90 days, and long-term were the ripple effects beyond 90 days. And if they had something urgent that they wanted us to consider, there was an open text box that they could answer that in. So within a week, we had about 70 responses, but the beautiful thing in that is that all the funders started using that same link, and we were sharing it out with all of our constituents together. So the data is accessible by all of the funders, but all of the nonprofits are also being channeled through that survey.
And were you Heidi, the catalyst for that survey? Did you develop it?
Yeah, we needed a communication mechanism quick, and it was easy for us to be nimble enough to do that and then deploy everything out to like a Microsoft Teams setup so that we could share it quickly and be somewhat agile. Yeah.
Bravo for you for doing that and making it happen. So you guys talked about making this funds available, putting money at the community foundation, lifting restrictions and stuff. Was that blanket across your portfolio? If there were large organizations that you were funding, did it apply equally to them as perhaps the very small one where perhaps your support is a bigger chunk of it?
So the first round, so we're obviously looking at this in phases. The first one was really to look at what was the quickest way we could mobilize and lift those restrictions. I would say as we're going into our next phase, which will probably start right away next week, is looking back at all of the organizations we support and then kind of prioritizing the urgency of our next round of funding to them and how we do that. So, you know, in a given year, we support over 100 nonprofits. And so trying to figure out of those, which ones are most stable for the next 30 days. We know everybody's hurting right now. It's even our largest, most sophisticated organizations that we do support are struggling. And so just trying to make sure within our portfolio, what are the relationships that we have the strongest ties with these nonprofits? Who's most vulnerable during this time? Who's serving some of the most vulnerable, and how do we maintain that support? So prioritizing the next round is coming up.
Okay. In that first round, however, in terms of, you know, taking away restrictions from money that had already been granted, we did not pick any particular segment of those grants. We really just said, Heidi, go and allow people to use that money, take those restrictions off. Some of them it didn't really apply and some did, but there was no segmentation of that.
I think that speaks well. As so many of our members are with these great relationships with executive directors and the board, so that there's that level of trust. We always talk about trusting nonprofits. I'm absolutely a believer in that, but also trusting each other within the organization. Heidi, a couple of people asked, could you run down those survey questions again? I think we went pretty quickly through them, and I think people are madly scribbling.
Sorry. I can share it. It's
We will make it available on our COVID-19 page. But if you just want to go over them again quickly, that would be appreciated.
Sure. The best way to contact you during this time. What concerns do you have facing your clients? What concerns do you have facing your staff? What concerns do you have facing your operations? And then rating where is your greatest need: urgent, short term, or long term.
And I think for everybody, there's a great lesson there too. I really like that last question, Heidi, where you're asking about the immediate, the short term, and the long term. If we think about a more traditional disaster, a hurricane or a tornado, oftentimes we all concentrate on what I refer to as the blanket and coffee phase. When the immediate aftermath, people need shelter. They need some place to live. And that's what makes the evening news. But what oftentimes gets lost is helping people rebuild in the long-term resiliency. So I think that's, you know, kudos to you for thinking in that longer term. So a final question for the two of you at this point. what advice would you offer to our community of lean funders? Heidi, perhaps you as an ED, and Marnie, perhaps you as a trustee. What would you suggest that people should think about, not only in the immediate, but perhaps in how they plan for the future?
Do you want me to go first, Heidi?
Go ahead.
Okay, so I would say the first advice I would get is to let go of the control and of the resources. You know, we're used to having these methodologies of process, and we just can't be tied to those right now. We just got to let go and trust and let the money flow and let the control go to the people who can make the decisions the quickest. Be fast and flexible. I would also say, for us at least, my advice would be, if it doesn't work this time, look for it for the next time, is to work with other funders and to figure out how to mobilize resources in dollars and beyond. So just as an example of that, our family business is a regulatory compliance business. And in this particular situation, you know, we don't usually have a strong tie between the business and the foundation. But in this case, given all the rules and federal, you know, legislation and regulations that are going on, we're really able to tap into the resources of our business and offer those for free to the nonprofit community. And so that was sort of an out of the box mobilization of resources for us that I think will be very valuable and really no added cost to the foundation. The last thing I would say is, and this is the tricky one that we're dealing with too right now, is to give to the need and to not what's easy. So it would be very easy to just, you know, give the money to, I don't know, one cause or to the emergency fund or to the thing that's emerging right now. But to your point earlier, Henry, it's, you know, what is 6 months from now going to look like? And looking at it from a systems point of view, what is the gap in the system? And what is that, what's going to be the gap 6 months from now? And, you know, we don't want to be doing the postmortem now, but in solving for that, but we do need to help in a different way than maybe just your, you know, that you would do off the cuff. Mm-hmm. So being quick, but putting some thought into the system that in the problem you're really trying to solve.
Great. Thanks, Marnie. And Heidi?
I would say all of our communication, we're using empathy as kind of a guiding principle. So, and I'm more than willing, you can actually see on LinkedIn how we communicated with the nonprofits and actually with all of our partners. We have a unique opportunity to leverage a lot of things that would be more challenging if we were trying to coordinate this effort to be perfect. And so, like Marnie said, we were able to connect with HR compliance when the federal legislation came down around FMLA and the Family Friendly Act that came through. And even now with federal legislation, we're trying to understand what our role could be in some of those, I'll say advocacy, but I don't know if I'm meaning in the formal sense yet, but just understanding and deploying education around some of those tactics. But also as the health systems were struggling with PPE and still are, we could connect them to supply chain experts relatively quickly overseas and get outside of their barriers that they had with preferred vendors and things like that that were coming into context. And we didn't want philanthropic dollars to go to that immediately, even though it seemed like it was an emerging need. The hospital said, no, like, we have the money to pay for that. That's not what our need is. We want you to focus on the community needs that are coming up. And so I feel pretty grateful that this community is rallying together to really be clear in our communication as, you know, the myriad of emergency response funds are now coming up, that people are saying like, no. Like, let's work on this together so that we're not doubling down and hoarding all of the resources. We're really trying to be open and kind of centralize some of the communication so that we're saying the same things or guiding people in the right ways.
I think you were, your last remarks, Heidi, and everything you guys are doing perfectly underscored my opening remarks about we really are all in this together. We're in it together as a community exponent, but each of you in your communities are in it with other funders, with local organizations, hospitals, first responders, whatever, that are helping respond to it, as well as your nonprofits. So it's really the time to break down as many barriers as we can and make information, knowledge, and help flow throughout the whole thing. Thank you both, Marnie and Heidi. Before we move on, Madeline, were there any specific questions related to them? I was trying to read questions as we were talking as well.
Yeah, we had one question at the beginning. Hold on, I have to scroll up. That asked if your foundation has a perpetuity mandate or not. And then the other question was any guidance on shifting from a check to ACH payments.
I'll let Heidi field that. We don't have a perpetuity. I mean, we hope, I think the founding generation hopes it would go on forever, but we really haven't had a lot of conversation about that. So we're in a bit of a limbo about that.
I can relate totally. And Heidi, on the bank transfer of funds?
I can send some recommendations. I just followed the business CFO's recommendation on how to do that. So I can send something along to the group on what's required. It's pretty simple. Actually, it was a lot easier than I expected.
Great. Yeah. If you send that along, we will post it and get it out to everyone. So thank you. So Heidi, Marnie, thanks so much. We're going to move on, but we'll come back to you at the end when there are some more general questions. And with that, I'd like to welcome Dan Doering, who's the executive director of the JRS Biodiversity Fund in Washington State. And I have to give a special tip of the hat to Don, because it was actually an email from him about 10 days ago, which became the catalyst for having these conversations. So Don, thank you. On behalf of everybody who's here, thank you for writing that email that got us to do this. These have been great so far. So welcome, and the same opening question, would you just give everybody a quick idea of what the fund does in normal times so that we can then understand how you're changing off of that?
Great. Thank you so much. And really, thank you for the years. I've gotten so much advice from peers. I really appreciate it, and it's fun to give back. So JRS Biodiversity Foundation, we're a private independent foundation. We had an endowment that used to be $50 million, so we give about $2 million per year for conservation science in Africa, and specifically IT for conservation. So think apps and platforms and databases, all the things that present the data that enable biodiversity conservation. About 85% of our funds go to Africa. So our typical grant is a $250,000 grant for 3 years. We give to cities, NGOs, museums, as well as government agencies. So compared to your typical Exponent member, we're more international. We give fewer and larger grants. But one thing about us is we're very used to operating in a high-risk environment, remotely, by wire. And in some ways, some of these systems we'll talk about, we kind of had in place because we work in Africa.
Thanks. I think your sound may have been a little choppy as we went along, but I think we're getting most of it, at least for the moment. So so let's run. So what's changed?
I'm sorry about the sound. Maybe it's my children on their remote classrooms using our bandwidth. But can you hear me okay?
I think we can right now, yes.
Okay, great. One of the things that's changed is I'm working less. You know, I'm at about 50 to 75% effectiveness because of my kids at home, because of we brought elderly parents into our home. And I think that's actually been a place to start with the grantees, to say, I'm pushing out goals, I'm stopping small projects, I'm changing expectations with my board, I'm relaxing timelines. So I think that's actually been a first helpful step in terms of what has changed in relating to grantees, of saying, we're in this together. We've moved very quickly to assure grantees of continued salary support, adaptation of their projects. I am urging grantees to get their reports in early and to request early payments. I'm very concerned about the fragility of some of the institutions we fund. I'm concerned if people will be able to access their salary money. So I'm really trying to get them to act quickly, because as we know, this is hitting the U.S. before Africa. Other things we're doing in terms of what's changed, we've established a kind of quick infrastructure grant fund. That'll be within my authority. That'll be $5,000 or $10,000 per grantee for things like home internet access, laptops, video conferencing, things to enable them and their partners to do their work. So that'll be under my authority. And we're also establishing kind of an internal mitigation fund, because one of the things we predict is that this is going to have a long-term effect. So we're trying to imagine all of our projects having to have almost another year of salary support, another six months of implementation support. So I'm trying to get my board to think that this is going to hit us over 3 years, and we're going to have to not only think about addressing this now, but recovery and kind of setting that aside in our grant making budget. So those are our big things, adjusting how we work, supporting grantees and those internal funds.
So, just picking up on some of what Heidi and Marnie talked about, that multi-stage, multiple stages of a disaster. The coffee and blankets, the rebuilding, and then the long-term resiliency. I'm curious, how is your board reacting to the realization that they're going to need to think that way? So this is not whatever it is will be cleaned up in a few months and then it's back to normal, that you may be doing that salary support for long-term, having changes to what you're doing. Are they receptive to this? Are you finding it's difficult for them to understand?
I have a great board, like we all do. I have a 12-person international board, and people are literally and figuratively in different places. And I've noticed that with Seattle kind of getting hit by this before other cities, that you kind of go through phases, and there's kind of a disorientation phase before you switch to thinking about opportunity. So I think I'm a bit out in front of the board now, and I don't mean kind of conceptually, but almost just timing-wise. So I think, there's still that kind of disorientation sort of phase, and I'm trying to be sensitive that they're all handling their own institutions and families and environments. So I think we're still settling, but we've had a few calls, had an executive committee meeting yesterday, and I feel that, pieces are starting to fall into place.
It sounds like, again, as with Marnie and Heidi, with our guests last week, lot of trust in the people that you're funding to just sort of blanketly say, we will continue to do this. We will extend your salary support, et cetera. How did you build that trust? Because now it seems more than ever, it's really critical that we all have that trust with our grantees.
Lobby, 866 NP Lobby. Please do contact us.
There we go. Trust is a long-term proposition, I think, as a grant maker, and you build it over a long period of time. We're, especially in this international space, we've always been highly adaptive. I always try to communicate to grantees, the one thing we know that won't happen is the plan and their proposal. And I give them the opportunity every 6 months to change their goals, to rebudget. And sometimes they have to learn that I'm not going to take the money away if they have missed things. We're committed to the award and we're in it for the long haul. So I think the trust has been built over a long period of time, but I've also tried to relate at a very personal level to the grantees. I sent kind of foundation email and I sent a survey I'll share. But I also sent a personal email just saying, here's what me and my family have learned living with this in the last 2 weeks. And I think that changed the conversation to just relate at that level to the grantees.
I think that's so important. All of us, regardless of what area we fund in, geographically, but also programmatically, whether it's the arts, the environment, education, healthcare, whatever, we're somewhat, on a conceptual level, perhaps removed from being in the first person. So if we fund reading in schools, that's great, but I venture to say all of us can read. If we fund a food shelter, I venture to say all of us are going home to a dinner. This virus has eliminated that. Everybody is vulnerable. We are just as vulnerable as the nonprofits we serve, as are the people who they serve. So I think, Dawn, I think there's a great lesson and an opportunity for all of us to just do that personal outreach. Many of these nonprofit executive directors or staff are probably, overworked at the moment and going full steam, and just giving them that phone call, even doing it on Zoom or Skype or FaceTime and have a virtual cup of coffee with them, just to let them know that you appreciate the position they're in because you are too, I think can go a long way to building trust, but also to helping with their own mental health and their well-being. So props to you for doing that. Now you talked about some survey work. You want to share briefly what you did and how it's making a difference?
Sure. I'll share that and I'll share the link, and I posted it to our website this morning as a blog. So one, we have a small group of grantees. I surveyed 25 grantees or 24, a few in the UK and the rest in Africa. But I think this is a scalable solution. You know, like Heidi, kind of tried to keep it small, tried to keep it short. What I did was I kind of first asked some open-ended questions. How are you adapting? Can you adapt? Not what are you doing, but kind of can you? And have you thought about this? How could this affect you? Before getting to sort of a similar semi-quantitative question saying, how much is this going to affect your work in the next month? Kind of at what percent effort will you work then and over the next 3 months? Because I wanted to establish a baseline on that. And then I asked, how can we help? How can our expertise help? And what are your concerns? A kind of a personal question. And those each, I had a professional researcher, happens to be my mother, helped design this. And it was designed kind of very intentionally. The big surprise was actually, well, one, that I got 100% response within 48 hours. So that speaks to just how urgent and important this is and real to people. But I thought this was a short survey, but what Microsoft Forms told me is that people were spending an hour on it. So what I know is that by my asking the question, people have to sit down and think through some of this. So that in itself was kind of a service, to the grantees. And we got a lot of information about their needs, about the response, about their long-term concerns, and started to give us almost a quantitative sense of how much the work was going to slow as we kind of project the long-term financial implications. So very helpful. And just emphasize that not only does this give you information at your portfolio level, but at the individual grantee level, the help they need, their personal concerns. You even learn about their family situations. So I'm very grateful that they took that time. And I think it'll have a real benefit now and as we resurvey again in several weeks.
And you're sharing that out so others can benefit, correct?
Yeah, and I'll share that in the chat now, and it's on our website as well.
Great. And in wrapping up with you, Dawn, at this point, what pearls of wisdom do you have for everybody out there? What great sage piece of advice?
You know, a mentor of mine once said, always argue principles, not facts. And I'm trying to, in all these conversations, just work on this principle of put people first. And I think if everything I do now is driven by putting people first, you know, the facts will fall where they may, but we'll always know why we made the decisions. And I believe that if we protect our people, we protect our investments and we protect our mission. So that's kind of the number one thing that's guiding me. Kind of grace and compassion for everyone in this moment. You know, one of the things we know is just how fast our world has changed, and it's likely to continue to be fast. And that's whether it's your lawyer, your attorney, your trust service, your grantee partners. And then the third thing I think is this idea of think fast and slow. You know, even though there's kind of fast strategic and technical pivots, there are even new opportunities. There's also the long game, that the world will return to where it was. Many things will be changed, but the big things that most of our foundations and funds work on will remain the same. So that long game of mission and relationships has to be balanced with this reactivity. Those are mine.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. I think maybe it was your first point or your second point. I've always felt as a funder that I'm investing in people as much as I am programs. And so I look for good leaders because I know they will make good things happen. And they, as I believe Heidi said earlier on, they know their business better than I do. As much as I might like to think I know it, they know it better. So thank you for those. Madeline, were there any specific questions for Dawn, or shall we move on?
Sorry, I was muted. I guess, have you had any success, I don't know, working with larger international relief orgs, such as like World Health Organization or anything that might be helpful at this time to share?
You know, we, in our regular work, we often intersect with them. I think everyone is so busy right now. You know, I would just mention, I recommended to my board that we make a contribution up to $1 million to some of the emergency funds, just out of a moral and charitable imperative, kind of to hell with mission. This is the right thing to do. My board wasn't there yet. So we kind of said, not for now. We're not going to kind of give to those bigger organizations and bigger funds. I hope we will. One of the things we know from other emergency experiences is how important this private money is, that foundation money moves so much faster than government money often, and first money is often really critical, even if it's the smaller money. So we're looking for opportunities. So.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, so let's move on to our final guest today. Lindsay Major is the Director of Mindful Operations and Finance from the CEDIC Social Justice Fund in North Carolina. Welcome, Lindsay. Again, would you like to give everybody just that capsule overview about the fund and what the fund funds?
Sure. Yeah, we are a private foundation based in North Asheville, North Carolina. We have about a $2.5 million annual budget. And we fund organizations and individuals who work in the areas of racial justice, LGBTQ justice, combating anti-Jewish oppression, as well as the intersection of all of those three areas. Our funding mechanisms primarily include multi-year general operating grants, capacity building grants, and awards to individuals recognizing past achievements. So, very similar to the MacArthur Foundation's Genius Grants. So those are the areas that we fund even through this crisis.
And how has the crisis impacted those that you fund, and then how are you addressing those that impact?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we've been recognizing is that many organizations are having to cancel their fundraising events or their conferences or their support groups, their gatherings, all of those essential community sustaining events, and donations are dwindling, you know, I think as people are sort of, you know, realizing the impact to their own finances, you know, those donations are dwindling to those nonprofits as well. We're also seeing that grant application deadlines are being moved back, which is great, but that might also mean that the release of those funds will likely be moved back as well. So, you know, things are being cut from the organization's event lists and so on and so forth. So last week, staff decided to release emergency funds to 19 of our existing local grantees. So these emergency funds were essentially general operating grants in the amount of $15,000 each to our existing grantees. The emergency funds from our budget came out of uncommitted fund line item that we budget in our annual budget. We've done it for the past 2 years, and we always end up using it for something to respond to events in our community.
And those $15,000 grants, those were just people receiving a check or a transfer. They didn't have to ask for it or anything. Is that correct?
They had no idea it was coming.
Yeah.
And I should say those were to 19 nonprofit grantees in our community. Yeah, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Great. And what was their response?
Well, I mean, they're just over the moon. You know, a lot of them, let's see, I'm trying to think, our grant making staff met last Wednesday, and then we sent letters out on Friday, and then checks are coming out this week, I believe. And so a lot of our nonprofits were already mobilizing and responding to the crisis. And so that was, you know, that was a big part of our decision, is we could have spent days deliberating on who should receive funds, but we wanted these funds to go out quickly. And we have close relationships with our existing grantees. We trust them. They do important work in Asheville's community. So a lot of them were already mobilizing and gathering resources for the people they serve. And so
they see it.
They're just super grateful.
I think, you know, you really answered this, but I think there's really something important for all of us to learn here, and that I was going to say, you know, what were financial considerations taken into account, but you already had that financial consideration built into your budget. So it was, you entered the year not exactly sure where it would be spent, but based on history, confident it would be spent, which made it much easier to liberate that money. So it feels like that's perhaps a great practice that people may want to start to think about. Obviously the size may differ based on the individual foundation, but what drew the board? I think you said this was the second year of doing this. What drew the board to create this sort of emergency funding, if you will, or not the funding, but the fund, the line item, so that you would have it for an emergency?
Yeah, our uncommitted funds. I think it was just a lot of, you know, I'm sure some of you can relate. It's like you set your budget out for the year. You have, you know, these funds going, you know, here and here and sort of all allocated. And then come April or October, whenever your fiscal year is, you know, in the middle of the year, you get these asks that are just like, oh man, that's really, yes, but we've already committed all of these funds. So we were seeing those asks coming in. And so we learned that, okay, well, maybe we need to have this line item in our budget that's for those asks, you know, and or for emergency responses to things that we don't foresee when we're doing the budget, or, you know, months ago.
What advice do you have for people out here?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, speaking of that uncommitted line item, you know, like I said, this is our second or third year that we have, you know, had it, and we've always used it. So I believe that it's really enabled us to be agile and responsive to the community needs as they arise. It also has enabled us to act fast. I know that's, you know, something that both I think Marty and Don pointed out is, you know, be quick, be agile. I would also say, and it's been said, trust your community leaders, trust your grantees. They know where to put the money and resources, you know. We didn't ask them, you know, we trusted, because we already had, you know, a grant with them, there were those things that we already knew about them and their work and what they did. So we had a trust, we have a relationship with them, but they've been, yeah, they know where to put those resources. So I'd say, yeah, trust your grantees, trust your leaders.
And trust yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, what's the line about paralysis through analysis? At some point, yes, be thoughtful, be smart, think about things, but make a decision. You know, the worst thing you can do is hang on, depriving the grantees and driving yourself nuts. Madeline, were there any specific questions for Lindsay?
Yes. Do you require grant agreements with your rapid and emergency response funding?
We do, let's see, our director of philanthropic partnerships, she sent out a letter and she's developing the agreement, but the funds are already have already been released. So it's sort of the timeline is not, you know, as probably as it typically would be. But again, they're unrestricted. So mm-hmm. we're not telling them, you know, the agreement was is not, you know, programmatic mm-hmm. or anything like that. So they are general operating grants.
Mm-hmm. And then we had a second question kind of coming after that about like grant agreements with international grants and kind of how to do the important due diligence for in light of emergency responses. So maybe Don could talk about that.
I think you mute.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry.
And thanks so much, Lindsay. Good to hear from you. The, you know, we have a very heavy, like 10-page grant agreement because with most of our expenditure responsibility grant agreement. And what we're doing with this emergency infrastructure stuff is I'm just increasing the amount of the original grant award on the grant agreement. So literally I just write an email as this is an amendment to your award is this, you can access this. I kind of print that email as a PDF and sign it and attach it back to that same email and it's done. So really try to streamline any kind of legal process and have it in the mainstream record down the line.
And I'll just add that in our foundation, we've done a similar kind of thing. We've made amendment grants. We've just, you know, it's literally just a couple lines. You're bound by everything we said before, except that you don't have to report by this date or whatever, but we don't make a big thing about it. So I'd love to just, you know, open it up if people have questions for any of them, any of our four guests in general, and perhaps while you're typing and or Madeline is sorting them out, I'd like to ask you all a couple of questions. And the first is, we're only a couple of weeks into this, I understand. But is there anything at this point that you would do differently, that you maybe jumped into doing something and you're going, oh, sounded great on paper. Maybe I would do it as literally differently. That doesn't mean not at all, but approach it differently. So any lessons learned?
This is Heidi. I don't know that independently on the foundation side I have any screw ups yet. I think
learning opportunity.
I'm okay to screw up. It's okay. Like that's not a deterrent for me. I think I was hopeful that collaboratively we could have a collective response faster. And I think I'm a little bit frustrated with waiting for some of the emergency response funds to deploy into the community with the rapid and changing environment. I think that's been a little bit of my frustration along the way is I don't think I put too much hope into that, but I do think people are giving to those funds and nonprofits are kind of hemorrhaging almost. And we're seeing the issues get bigger and bigger and bigger. And we're still yet to hear when the grants are being released. And so I'm a little nervous about that. And so how do we use our voice, as the convener, as the funder in the area to really influence those processes to be more rapid? How do we, encourage some of those, and we have really good relationships with all of our United Ways and community foundations. So how do we kind of give them permission? They have such a broad stakeholder engagement and responsibilities. Like how do we encourage them to take more risks at a time when you don't have to be second guessing every move you make or what the process is for establishing the right grants?
Any of you others have any? Don, yes, please.
Sure. You know, in fact, we had learned a hard lesson around trying to respond around the Ebola epidemic in Africa several years ago. So we had actually learned a bit how to respond quickly. One of the things that really helped was seeing what other foundations were doing as quickly as possible. I think it made a difference to the board. I made a little list I can also send. I said, this is what other foundations are doing. And I think it just gave them a secure framework that they weren't getting too far out ahead. again, you know, some people have hardly personally felt this at all. So things like materials from Exponent Philanthropy and others, and I'd suggest we could think as a community about always maintaining an emergency response link with some resources that's just there all the time, because something will happen again.
This is Marnie. I guess it would be a disappointment, not from this experience, but I think it was one of the hurricane experiences or something like that. And I'm not sure what we even learned from it yet, but we typically give very locally. And in those cases, we gave to national big organizations. And a couple of years later, we found out by accident, I mean, pure coincidence, that our money was not used the way that we intended it to. It wasn't misused, it just wasn't used. And I don't know, that was really disappointing. And in this case, it was for mental health services, which is really near and dear to our heart. And so maybe the lesson is in not trying to kind of pigeonhole what you want to happen. Maybe we needed to let control of that, or maybe the lesson too is that when you don't know the organization that well, and when it is a big, huge national organization, that they're just, it isn't going to be the same. And so we don't do that as much anymore. You know, we really pulled back from these big emergency funds because we don't feel like our money is being used in the way in which we expected.
Thank you. The other question I throw out to the four of you is, are you being asked by new grantees, people who were not in your portfolio? We've talked about how we've responded to those who are in your portfolios. Are you being asked, and how are you responding to them in this moment? I'm looking for who's unmuting first. Heidi, thank you.
Yeah, sorry. That button is hidden. Yes, we have. And we simply have a denial message. Doesn't feel good right now, but it is a denial message that we created. And then we put a message out on our website that we are supporting the organizations proactively that we have the deepest relationships with. And so our intent is really to maintain and honor those relationships rather than create new ones in this crisis. And so we're trying to encourage them to work with the other organizations in their region. We know we can't save them all. And I think that's the hard reality that I'm facing right now, is that there's so many organizations in our region that that just we haven't had that relationship with. And so that it's harder to do that now.
Yeah, I think that's one of those, you know, if we all gave away all of our money today from all of our foundations, there would still be issues and crises. So at some point it becomes perhaps Solomon-esque. How do you divide the baby in half? How do you decide where you're going to put your money? And certainly, as you said, Heidi, sticking with, the base that you know, the portfolio that you know in the moment, is probably important. But Dawn, Lindsay, I don't know if you guys have thoughts on that question.
Well, you know, my thought, I hate to be the one to sort of say this, but I believe it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. I mean, I really believe all the scientific forecasts that are going to show that. And we're going to have people in our communities and at our grantees who are going to be sick and die. And that's a very hard thing to say. But I think I'm not even sure that we've yet gone fully out ahead of really thinking through how do we support that succession? How will we respond? So I think maybe, you know, mentally and emotionally, we're not quite there yet, but probably in another week, we're really going to have to think about a much more, when there's a much more kind of desperate appeal from new and existing grantees. So I think there's another wave of this coming, that we have to be ready for. So I don't have that answer yet, Henry, but except to start thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think I agree with you. This is going to get a lot worse before it gets better. So we probably all have an obligation to at least start thinking about that much longer term if we haven't. Lindsay, any thoughts on that, about being approached by new people trying to get into your portfolio?
Yeah, I mean, ditto what Heidi said. It's so, it's hard. And our response has been similar as far as honoring our existing relationships, and honoring our existing grantees, and you know, long term, we just so happen to be in the midst of a strategic planning process, and so you know, probably be integrating some strategies on how to have more of a midterm and long term response. Also on the docket is a community participatory grant making process that we're hoping to bring in, have a portion of our funds be decided by representatives who we serve. So community members, sort of bringing them into the loop of making those kinds of decisions because they're doing the work in our community. So we're hoping that that will sort of, hoping in the next months to, you know, year, bring that into our process as well.
Madeline, any questions that are popping up for everyone?
Yeah, but I also have another question for Lindsay, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
At any point during your discussion of kind of dispersing the $15,000 grants, was did you think about like the size of the grant and how that might affect the nonprofit budget and like tipping them, and how maybe other people could think about that if they want to have that conversation, like considering the size of the nonprofit's budget when giving the grant away?
Yeah, we definitely started to go down that rabbit hole. and we could have easily spent, again, days deliberating over that. But we decided not to, to be responsive and quick and agile in getting it out. And, you know, typically we fund a lot of grassroots organizations as it is. And so we don't typically determine grant amounts based on the organizational's annual budget, because we recognize that the larger, more institutionalized, not national nonprofits have access to funders through their national networks. So the more local, grassroots, community-led organizations, they don't have that same access. And so typically we give them grants of similar sizes. But definitely in this case, we were just like $15,000 across the board. And we just made that decision and went with it.
Great. Thank you. And then another person asked, they have a grant scheduled to go out in June of 2021, and they can't fund it earlier, but because of the crisis, the organization might not exist then. Do any of you have ideas on how they could handle this kind of situation?
So just as point of clarification, the money can't go out until 2021 because?
I don't have more information on that. Yeah.
Well, before our guests chime in, I think that's a decision that, you know, you need to make as the funder, and that's, you know, you, the board, the organization, is this organization worth, keeping alive? Because they're doing good work. So, do you allocate funds earlier? Without knowing more, it's hard to answer, but I think that's a sort of a very individual question. I don't know if others have a thought on that.
Sorry, the person who asked the question said that they, they project money out a year in advance, and so they have funds already, and I guess this next round will go out next summer.
Hi, I know I'm not one of the speakers, but I have something that might be helpful.
Please.
To this, if that's all right. Mm-hmm. My name is Amelia Abdulrazik. I'm a program manager at a family foundation based in San Francisco called Preston Warner Ventures. And we started funding a small organization in Uganda that's doing family planning, livelihoods, and some climate work. And so we had given them a small grant, and then another foundation friend of ours wanted to jump on but couldn't until next year. So we had a conversation, and we were able to say, you know, we will be funding them next year, and that helped that foundation kind of be able to fund this organization next year, knowing we would still be there. So my thought is, if you have any other funder colleagues, maybe to reach out to them and see, you know, either funders that are already funding this organization, or maybe who could throw in a small grant and kind of help bridge that organization until your money is ready to go.
Yeah, and that goes to what Heidi touched on, I think, way back at the beginning about really understanding your community of funders, so that you do, and community, understand when I say community, I think Heidi mm-hmm. was talking in a very geographic sense, but it could also be a very geographically diverse community, but you all fund cancer research, or you all fund you know, something overseas or whatnot. So it's a community that way. So knowing that community, building those relationships internally before the crisis presents itself, perhaps gives you that opportunity, as you were saying, Amelia, to reach out to others. Thank you for that. And Heidi, it looks like you were ready to chat.
No, it was okay. I just was gonna say, you know, I think using your leverage, I don't know if this is the case, but we are challenging ourselves that, and I know this was brought up on last Friday's call, but you know, that minimum distribution requirement can sometimes be a stumbling block. We're trying to think about that as the floor and not the ceiling. I don't have an authority yet to say that, but I think that's an aspiration of ours, is that doesn't have to be the top of our giving. It could be something else this year. And I know this group has talked more about that. So if that's getting in the way, maybe challenge what your assumptions or understanding is around that.
Yeah. You know, years ago, somebody said to me, well, we can't do something because it's not in the budget. And this was back in the for-profit world, and it was something we critically needed to do. And I said, you know, the budget is something written down, our best estimate looking forward. That should never prevent us from doing something that's important or necessary or an unforeseen opportunity that we could take advantage of. So, you know, I would suggest, while yes, budgets are critical and planning is critical, that there are times that things happen that nobody foresaw. And just because it's not there, maybe require some rethinking on your part, which is why in Lindsay's case, I believe it was Lindsay who, you know, you set up that line item, anticipating that there will always be something. And if there's a wonderful situation where there's no crisis, well, you could just distribute that to your existing grantees, and I'm sure they would be more than happy to cash an additional check in good times and put it to good use. So that's at least my thought about that. Don, please.
Hey, maybe it's just echoing the same thought of it's just a time for high flexibility. You know, I think, you know, always thinking about best practices gets us to kind of move to the average and not the exceptional. And there's not much in philanthropy that a creative accountant and lawyer and board can't solve or walk back later. So I think it's a great time to kind of throw out assumptions and rules and think about creatively, you know, what you can do if it's modifying a bylaw or a special motion or changing practice or breaking the budget or, you know, again, like moving your minimum distribution or your financial goals. But this is just really the time to do it. And there are probably a lot of people who'd help you find a creative way to do it, as Heidi pointed out.
Madeline, any more?
Has anyone, I know a lot of you talked about, maybe some surveys that you created, to help get emergency response funds out, but have you done any thinking on changing your, grant applications for future years and either creating a section about COVID-19 to have, grantees talk about, how it might have impacted their work?
Yeah, I can highlight a little bit about what's happening about that. We have gone to kind of a collective grant application. As I mentioned in that collaboration, everybody was using the survey results as a base. And then there was a streamlined email communication. So anything that was coming into the emergency response fund in particular went to one email, and those were distributed with the funders in the region. Those who had, and we tried to share or have relationship owners too in certain cases. So there is some work happening around a common grant application. We all pretty much asked similar questions anyway, so it didn't make sense for them to answer my questions and another funder's questions. Like, we were just all sharing the data that they had already given us rather than trying to figure it all out separately. So I think just streamlining that process and then sharing it with others has been kind of our methodology.
Cool. Lindsay, were you going to say something?
Yeah, just quickly. Most of our grant applications and grant reporting is a conversation that our director of partnerships has with each of our grantees. And so we've really made strides to move away from lengthy written applications and reports. So because the reporting and the application is more of a conversation that our director documents, and then there it's documented, it's usually a pretty organic just conversation. So I would anticipate that this crisis will probably come up in conversation and therefore be documented for our reporting and application purposes as well.
I'd like, Don, please.
I just sent all of our current grantees a revised reporting form. I just looked at it and just said, which are the least important questions, and cut out three of them and shortened it and said, let's just make this shorter now. When you have time, let's define a set of key results. Just tell me how you're doing. We're in the midst of a round of grant making now. We send our grants out for external review. We specialize in a lengthy paper intensive process. And I expect we're going to have to get to the end of it and actually see, can we make these grants now, or will it move 6 months later? So I think a lot of that adaptation is unfortunately going to come later this year.
Thank you. So before I wrap this up, one thing that I just scribbled down as I was listening to people speak and looking at some of the questions here, I'd suggest that all of us in the funding community, we should all be keeping our own little notes or journals about what we're experiencing as we go through this, because things seem to change day to day. And the great idea today might not be so great tomorrow, or something we're thinking about today that I don't know if that'll really fly, a week or two from now might be just the right thing. And more importantly, 6-8 months next year, when this is hopefully all, deep in the rear view mirror, it might provide some context for all of us to think about how we might want to change things in the future. So in the heat of the moment, scribbling some notes, just open up a file, take random notes and keep them might be a great way to come back to yourself at some point in the future and remember just what you were thinking. And so with that, I really want to thank Lindsay and Marnie and Heidi and Don for their participation today and sharing their stories. Madeline, again, thanks to you and the rest of the staff who helped do this. Brendan, I promise you one of these days I'll surprise you and just pretend my internet went out so you can take over. I want to remind you all we'll be back next week. As we mentioned at the top of the program, special webinar next Thursday, the 2nd at 2 p.m. specifically about making grants to individuals in this situation, with a couple of CPAs who are going to talk about where do the regulations that allow you to do this, and then going forward, how would you be showing this on your future 990 PF? So hopefully helping you with that. As the old cliche goes, keep the cards and letters coming. If you've got great stories to tell, we'd love to know about them, and perhaps have you here sharing them one week, or writing for us if you find great resources. We're trying to be a hub and share that out with people. So again, let us know. Madeline, do you have any closing words on just how people do that sharing and where they should send information to?
Yes. You can post any questions you have, any kind of strategies or tactics you're using in the discussion community that we have online. And we can use that as a way to kind of generate ideas, content, even questions you have, pose them to the group. I think it's over 800 members strong. So you have a great pool of people to get ideas and feedback from. And then if you have other specific things you want to share with us, you can email info@exponentphilanthropy and it'll be directed to the right person, whether it's you want to come and talk on a like live discussion that we're having, or you just found something really cool and want us to know about it.
Great. Thank you, Madeline. As always, I wish you all good health. Don't forget to wash your hands, elbow bump, 6 feet apart. Have a good week, and hopefully we'll see you all back here next week, although don't ever hesitate to reach out to any of us. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
All right.